Track 2, the development of a protective persona. On the last track, we discussed the six steps of the adjustment stage of family addiction. These six steps are the erosion of trust, avoidance and control, the family becomes reactive, communication breakdown, and monitoring. On this track, we will discuss the second stage of family addiction, the development of a protective persona. As you know, a protective persona develops to protect family members from the pain that addiction now regularly creates and masks the fear family members feel. For example, the mother who sobbed and cried for her daughter in stage 1 becomes tough as nails, seemingly heartless in stage 2. I often find that these personas become so ingrained into addicted families that individuals lose their authentic personalities and become further unable to communicate with each other. In Trisha's family, this was part of a vicious cycle of isolation. This isolation from each other increased the need to develop a protective persona, which in turn further isolated the family members from each other. For Trisha and her family, there were 5 aspects of the development of a protective persona. These aspects of the development of a protective personality included polarization of the family, distancing, the breakdown of family rituals, the creation of new rules, and shame and blame. For Trisha's family, the first aspect of the second stage of family addiction was the polarization of the family. Trisha's family broke down into camps, the care camp and the control camp. In the control camp, Trisha's mother, Leanne, and her oldest sister, Jean, believed that boundaries need to be made and respected and feared that being lenient would lead Jerry sinking further into addiction. The care camp, which consisted of Jerry's mother, Lucy, and his son, Andy, feared confronting the situation, knowing how angry confrontation made Jerry. In Trisha's family, these camps fought bitterly, pitting the family members against each other. This increased a communication breakdown similar to what we discussed in Track 1. Are you treating a family, like Trisha's, in which the members have set up camps? In the second stage of family addiction, Trisha's family began to develop parallel lives, going outside of the family to find relationships that meet the needs that used to be met by family members. This distancing was the second aspect of the development of a protective persona. As you are well aware, it is natural for people to distance themselves from pain, especially when they are powerless to stop it. Trisha's father had been an alcoholic since Trisha was 10. Now 14, Trisha stated, "I started doing a lot after school. I did a lot of sports and clubs, stayed over at friends a lot. The only time I felt good about myself was away from home, but I still felt scared, even away from Dad's yelling and drinking. One time, I was at my best friend's Keisha's house, and her dad accidentally smashed his finger while he was putting in a nail to hang a painting. He yelled really loud, and I got scared, and I hid in the bathroom for an hour. Well, Keisha's dad is the nicest guy in the universe, but I couldn't help thinking he was going to get scary like my dad." Obviously, by living a life separate from her family, Trisha found chances for intimacy and self-esteem, but her fears entered these other relationships as well. Trisha stated, "Even when people were nice, like Keisha's dad, I was scared. I never ended up feeling really close, even with my best friend. There was so much I never told her. I thought she'd think we were freaks and not be my friend anymore. I wanted to be away so much. But you know, I felt bad too, like I was being a bad sister for leaving my baby brother alone with my parents." I commonly see in clients like Trisha that although their parallel lives bring a sense of relief, this feeling is often accompanied by a sense of guilt for abandoning the family. In addition to polarization and distancing, the third aspect of the development of a protective persona in Trisha's family was the breakdown of family rituals. As you know, one of the ways families create closeness is through rituals, such as family dinners and birthday celebrations. I find that funerals and wakes are a good example of how family rituals create closeness, helping the family support each other through grief. These rituals quickly collapsed in Trisha's family, removing that means of reconnecting. Trisha told me that her family used to play board games together every Friday night. As Daddy started drinking more and more, he stopped playing with us. We'd be sitting there playing and hear his car pull up and everything would stop. We'd be silent, waiting to see whether he was drunk or not. My little brother, Ben, he was just 7, and he told me, "You just have to look in his eyes and you can tell if it's Daddy or the other guy there." After a while, we just kind of stopped bothering with the games. In Tricia and Jenny's families, the fourth aspect of the development of a protective persona for the family members was the creation of new rules. As you have probably experienced, this can happen when a family tries to gain control over the escalating crises caused by the family member's addiction. Do you agree that this is especially true when the addict is an adolescent? In Jenny's family, when a crisis occurred, her parents came up with a plan to control the situation and stop the crisis. This was a coping mechanism for her family. Jenny, 18, addicted to cocaine and alcohol, usually agreed, at least in that moment, with the new rule, causing a reduction in tension and signaling a temporary end to the crisis. Jenny told me, "It always went the same way, and I'd sit there and I'd listen like a good girl. Sometimes I'd start crying and tell them how sorry I was, a promise not to do it again. Then they come up with some new theory of what was wrong with me, and make a new rule that they thought would solve everything. I'd pretend to be excited, and they'd be happy, but it never worked. That's how I ended up in treatment. Mom said if I used again, I'd go to treatment or be kicked out." Do you have a client, like Jenny, whose family keeps making new rules to feel in control over the addiction? In addition to polarization of the family, distancing, the breakdown of family rituals, and the creation of new rules, the fifth stage of the development of a protective persona for Tricia's family was shame and blame. As you are aware, shame results in part because everyone in the addicted family knows on some level that the family is not doing well, and that each person is somehow contributing to this condition. Do you find, as I do, that family members who feel this shame frequently avoid dealing with it by blaming others? Understandably, blaming allowed Tricia's family members to pinpoint and solve a problem without admitting to being part of the problem. For example, Jerry's drinking was blamed on Leanne's anger, and Leanne's anger was blamed on stress at work, and so on. Blaming, as you know, also allows other family members, especially children, to explain why they are different and do not fit in with other families. Shame and blaming not only isolated Tricia's family members from each other, but from outside sources of support as well. Tricia told me, "We were all so ashamed of what our family had become that we were afraid to be around normal people. We'd go to work or school, come home, shut ourselves in our separate rooms, and that was our life. If relatives or friends called inviting us to get together, we always said no. I guess the TV became everyone's best friend." I recommended the family map exercise to Tricia to help her become familiar with how her and her family's protective persona had influenced their relationship. First, I asked her to draw a family tree, with boxes representing each member of the family. After Tricia drew and connected all of the boxes, I asked her to add descriptive phrases for each person, both good and bad. For example, under the box for Tricia's older brother Andy, she wrote, "Got attention by being naughty. Told good jokes." I find that this exercise is a good tool for opening up a discussion with my clients about roles that each family member takes and the nature of their protective personae. Would playing this track be beneficial to one of your clients? On this track, we have discussed the second stage of family addiction, the development of a protective persona. There are five aspects of the development of a protective persona. These are polarization of the family, distancing, the breakdown of family rituals, the creation of new rules, and shame and blame. On the next track, we will discuss stage 3 of family addiction, hopelessness. In my experience, there are 4 important aspects of hopelessness. They are negative attachments, unbridgeable gulfs, living in a state of trauma, and connections no longer hold. Question 2. What are the 5 aspects in the development of a protective persona?